Welcome to the EntrePastors Podcast. This show helps pastors think, act, and thrive as prosperous entrepreneurs. And now, here are your hosts, Les Hughes and John Sanders.
Well, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the EntrePastors Podcast. My name's John Sanders, and I'm here with my co-host, Les Hughes. Les, it's good to be in the studio with you, man.
What is up, man? What's going on in your world?
You know, since you and I, in the early part of this year, started a commitment, at least a 90-day experiment, to producing daily podcast episodes, you've done some episodes by yourself. I've done some episodes by myself. And so when we get on for these Friday edition shows, like, feels like the old days where Les and John get to hang out together. Been lonely in the studio without you, man.
The old days, all of but 2 years ago.
Yeah. Were you lonely making your podcast without me? Were you like, man, I just miss having John?
It was definitely different. Yeah. It was definitely kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have you, man. Looking forward to sharing the conversation today. You and I were introduced, I think, through our mutual friend, Justin Janowski, I think is where this connection came to us from. But we've got a guest on the show today by the name of Trent Booth. And Trent is not a pastor per se, but definitely has a heart for ministry and is in the coaching space. He would very much be an example of what we would call the information-based pathway, where you can monetize a message. He does a lot of leadership coaching. I'm not going to steal all his thunder. I'll let him kind of unpack his story. But once again, another example of just how possible it is to serve and to sell and to create a profitable business around coaching, which we know that resonates with many in our audience. So this will be a good conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So if you just lean in, if you've ever thought that coaching might be for you, or you know somebody or heard somebody that did it, or you saw a Facebook ad and thought, I wonder if this would be a good chance to hear from somebody that, even if you started today, is not a great deal ahead of you.
Yeah. And Les, in the coaching space, there is a lot of fluff like out there in terms of the marketing. Sometimes people try and sell different products and services around coaching, and they make a lot of claims. I had a question not too long ago from a pastor saying, does anybody actually make money as a coach? Like, is that even a possible thing? Or do you only make money selling, products about coaching? And I said, no, my friend, there's many, many people who are not just making money as coaches, but they're serving people in very powerful ways. It can be done, but there is fluff, and you need to cut through the fluff. But Trent is a great example of the non-fluff part of coaching. Yeah. Like, he's the real deal.
Yep, as well said.
Good. Well, without any further ado, guys, we are glad to have you on this episode. Check out this conversation that Les and I had recently with our friend Trent Booth. Here we go. Well, Trent, it is our pleasure to welcome you as a guest to the EntrePastors Podcast, man. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to connect with you guys and your audience.
Yeah, you were just reminding me that we got connected through our mutual friend, Justin Janowski, who's been a guest on this podcast, and he is a friend of myself and Les. And as soon as you started kind of reminding me of your story, I was like, oh, this is about to be good, because I've heard you share your story on another podcast, and you are our people, and I believe you've got some real value to deliver to our community as you share your story. So let's do this. Start with, I was born on, and then just fill in all the details from there. Give us your story. We want to hear it.
So I live outside of Philadelphia now in New Jersey, but I was born in Canada in 1974. So yeah, I guess an 80s kid. And nobody grows up in Canada with a tack in a map of New Jersey saying someday. And yet it's been an amazing place to raise the family and by way of many stops along the way in Canada, mostly raised in Vancouver, but stops in Calgary, Montreal, Ottawa, we would call home today. And my wife and I have been married for coming up on 25 years now. We've got three grown kids. The youngest is now finishing high school. And life
you don't
been
sound
really
like you were born in Canada. I'm not hearing it. So
my Canadian friends accuse me of having adopted the American accent. So I'm not well. Sure.
I was waiting on him to tell us something about his house.
My wife definitely gets busted at the hospital. She's a dietitian. She gets busted daily. She says out and out. And
about yeah,
yeah
about
going, yeah about. Man, yeah, I say yeah. About, but that's Americanized. So okay. I would say I've I walk among you and mostly don't get caught.
All right.
If I have an adult beverage, I might say house, and that's over, you know, but we're sorry. No. We'll say the stories.
All right. No, it's all good, man. Keep going. I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I just had to point out the obvious. I wasn't hearing a Canadian accent there, but keep going.
No, not at all. Well, I was fortunate to have found a unique opportunity at 19 while I was just getting started into Bible college, and it was Cutco Cutlery, and was sponsored by a company just that allowed us to do some pretty wild things. I was studying leadership at 19 years old. And getting a chance to run in my own office as kind of a quasi entrepreneur, kind of like Chick-fil-A, you can't buy your way in; you'd have to work your way up. And I was promoted from Calgary to Montreal, and got to, as a 21-year-old kid, pioneer our French expansion for Cutco. Did well there for a number of years. In fact, broke some recruiting records. So in 2004, I had an opportunity to bring the family down to the States to study best practices, what was going on, and. And I stumbled into coaching, which was not even a word that was in my vernacular until, I was probably 35 or something like that, 33 years old. One of our executive vice presidents had 8 sessions with me. We had something called Vector University, which is an event. You get rah-rah at the event, and then it's over. Well, he had 8 follow-up calls with me for about 45 minutes, just pouring into my life, getting into the soil of Trent Booth. And all of a sudden, it was just such a breath of fresh air. Mm. Fast forward a couple of years, he got sick, and as he was fighting cancer, he wasn't able to continue the coaching sessions. I had all of his exercises, and although I didn't identify as a coach, I was like, listen, I at least have the exercises, and if you're willing to talk to me, I'd love to pour into you. So fell into coaching that way, and have been speaking at churches since I was about 22 years old or so, and so enjoyed a lot of things about being a sales manager, but also was always wondering, you know, am I supposed to be a pastor? Am I supposed to be in a full-time vocational Christian ministry? And there's a lot of things I love about coaching in the sense it still gave me an opportunity to dig deep with people, to ask some great questions, and to help them get unstuck. And even though I wouldn't have used the word coaching at 18, I'm like, wow, when I discovered what that role was, I'm like, that looks amazing.
Yeah.
And frankly, I was pretty good at it. So some of the early people I started coaching started having success. And the hardest thing as a new coach is to get the repetitions. Well, I was already doing my job. So a lot of people wanted to talk to me, and for free. I didn't have to send out any invoices, but I got 10,000 hours pretty quick under my belt.
Wow.
And then I was able to start flexing that muscle outside of the company. I'm like, well, I'm curious, could this work elsewhere? And sure enough, it does. So my second 10,000 hours, I made a little more money by invoicing and building a side gig we now call Veritas Leadership Group. I just retired after 30 years at Cutco this past December, and December 22. And January 23, we launched Veritas Leadership Group officially, and trying to continue that impact. Right now, it's over 11 companies and dozens of participants.
Man, that's cool. So let me just back up a little bit. For those in our audience who might not be familiar with Cutco, that's like people who don't know what Chick-fil-A is, but there might be a few out there that don't know. So what is Cutco? And just walk us through a little bit of some of the training that you received there and how that maybe set you up for the success that you're having today. And then I also want to ask, when you were receiving coaching, what was it in? Like, what was it around? Was there a theme of the coaching? Tell us a little bit about that as well, sure. If you don't mind.
Go right back. So Cutco Cutlery is all manufactured in Olean, New York. So it's all American made, which everybody now today knows that's really expensive way to do it. Mm-hmm. Your line one is probably going to be healthcare for those 800 employees that are all in this little tiny hamlet of Olean, New York, 10,000 people. All still locally made, privately held, just an amazing success story. And their sales training is second to none. I would even say that their leadership development program has churned out a lot of people that are making a significant dent in the universe. But that's the sales side. The knives are awesome. People I sold to 30 years ago still have them. And if they don't look as good or work as good, they send them back and they'll polish them up and send them back looking and working like brand new. So can't say enough about Cut Guys. I joke, it's still we. If I've been there for 30 years, it'll probably always be we. A lot of affinity for Cutco. And the fact that they had a leadership development department, which was eventually, they created a department for me. We were doing well with the coaching. So they said, why don't you go ahead and do that for more people? Looks like you've been helping people. That should be your job. The initial coaching, when I first heard that name, I was like, that sounds weird. And sure enough, there's a lot of weird out there in terms of the coaching space, to be clear.
But you know, if they would have called it leadership instead of coaching, you wouldn't have thought a thing about it, would you?
Not at all. If somebody said, hey, tell you what, you're going to get, and that's the way they framed it. They didn't call it coaching. They said, you're going to get 8 calls with Marty Dmitrovich. I'm like, this is an important guy. And there he was just asking me questions about me and not about my results, but how I was doing. Mm-hmm. I would call that today qualitative coaching.
Yeah.
And specifically where there's no agenda. I'm bringing the agenda. So he would say, hey, we're going to talk about whatever you want to dive into. What's causing pain? What are some of your strengths? What are your dreams? What's keeping you up at night? Let's talk through that stuff. And as a solopreneur for a number of years, that was refreshing because usually I was used to pouring out into other people. All of a sudden now I can pour out, but I've got something in the bucket.
Yeah.
And it was transformative, really.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. So I heard you mention that in that journey, you wrestled with the question of, should I be a pastor? I want to ask, where in the world did that question come from? Because normal people don't ask that question. Normal people don't, especially successful people in the marketplace who are making money in sales, they don't sit around and go, I wonder if I should be a pastor. So where did that bug get under your saddle?
You know, it's interesting. Again, my grandfather, Lutheran pastor, but went into seminary at 55, like really old, late in life, decided to pivot. And his first assignment was in Northwest Territories, Canada. Nobody goes up there.
Wow.
You can only get there by plane. And that was his first assignment. Any case, I would say it skipped a generation, but at 16 years old, God reaches into time and space, touches my heart, and all of a sudden, I'm different. And never to look back. I've got 3 brothers. I wouldn't say they would have the same experience as me. But as I was considering, what do you want to do? I've got a 19-year-old son that has been recently asking the question, what do I want to do with my life? And I was good at a lot of things, but I couldn't pin it down. I was like, I could be a teacher. I love impacting people. I could be a preacher. I love God and I want to make a difference for the kingdom. I could be, I don't know. I liked acting. I was in theater at the time. I loved singing and playing guitar. There's a lot of things I could do. What did I want to do? But then I found this Cutco thing and I was loving the Cutco thing. I was like, man, I've got a path in front of me and everything. But in the 90s, if you'd love Jesus, you went into either be a missionary or a pastor. So I was like, well, I should be a pastor. And it was always a question that I continue to ask. And I don't presume even now that that wasn't planted by God himself. So at many different turns, or frankly, if I had a bad sales week, I was like, is it time to be a pastor now? Is this God's way of saying, no, get out of what you're doing, come out and go in and do the thing you're really supposed to do. I would say that was an ethic that I really struggled with in most of my 20s. In the interim, though, I was looking to make sure that regardless of where I was going, I was going to level up. So if I was going to be called into ministry, I wanted to be a better communicator. If I was going to be called into more entrepreneurial serialness, right? Just continue to bounce around. I wanted to get more skills that way too, to be prepared for wherever it is that God might lead us. In fact, the crazy part is when I did become the senior pastor, it wasn't the plan. It wasn't something I was looking for in that moment. We planted a church in 2009 with a friend, that senior guy had planted in South Jersey, but was moving back to Colorado. And the options were close the church or I take over. I checked in with my wife. That would be a terrible decision to just make that unilaterally. So Christy said, hey, let's give it a shot. And after 100 days, we re-upped and we had money in the bank. And I was bivocationally working full time and running the church full time, which I didn't know at the time was going to be 40 hours each.
Wow.
If nothing goes south, nothing goes wrong, it's 40 hours, man, to prepare. And something's going wrong every week. I'm laughing knowing that as pastors listening to this, they go, oh, dude, what week is that? That right. Unicorn week where nothing went wrong.
Yeah.
So there's always a death or visit to the hospital.
That makes sense, though. Right? That makes sense that would be so appealing to somebody that was wired like you. And the guys that are around our age or so, around your age, will recognize this too. Two of the strongest voices during that time were Rick Warren and Bill Hybels. They were both still rising stars and they were putting out a lot of stuff on leadership and they were having conferences, you know, on church leadership, Christian leadership as well. So that would have, there are a lot of people that can identify with that part of your story for sure. But that's what made that's why it was so appealing to kind of scratch that coaching place in you.
No question. And I would even say this, as a full-time vocational guy, to call it bivocational, the Rick Warren model was here's the sermon outline to make sure that you're not just the worst preacher ever. At least let's get the scripture and have a clear message. Personalize it from there. So I wasn't doing messages from scratch. That facilitated an ability to do that. And also, I would say that the ethic and the organization that Rick Warren was bringing to the table was very appealing. In fact, part of me wondered, at that time, no question, right? I'm not sure if it's aged as well. But at that time, I thought, well, maybe all my experience in marketing and leadership development is specifically wiring me to be this type of a pastor, and maybe it would be a big deal. I am grateful that I was not in a place as young Trent Booth, because I could have done some damage. And we've seen some pastors do some damage, not finish well, and maybe they're in it for the wrong reasons. And I think a lot of that was dressed up in marketing, et cetera, that, again, hasn't aged great. And even now, some of my sermons are still on YouTube. If you're to watch them, there are some cringe moments, my friends.
I think that's all of
like,
us.
Not straight up heresy, but like moments where I'm like, dude, are you kidding me?
I promise if people dug up the sound bites on the internet for me, we would all cringe. There's things I wish I had never said from the stage. So again, not apostasy or heresy, just stupid, you know, cringe. I want to go back just a minute and lean into something though. Cause I was born in 1978. I grew up as a child in the '80s, you know, in church life and in the '90s. And so I just want to go there, cause this is something we talk about occasionally on this podcast, is that so often in the church model, what we're given is this, I don't know that anyone ever says it outright, but it's in the water we drink. And it's this idea of like, man, if you really want to serve God with your life in ministry, full-time ministry, and I always put air quotes around it, you can be a pastor, you can be a missionary, maybe work for a nonprofit or a charity, but it's got to be something vocational. And rarely are we actually telling people that there's a path forward to serving God full-time in ministry and doing it in the marketplace. Now, at Entree Pastors, we don't offer it up as an either-or. We serve the both and community, and yet I still am sensitive to those pastors, because I've met many over the years who either they need to step away from pastoral ministry, maybe they never should have stepped into it in the first place, because they were given bad information, and they love the Lord, and it's been the results have been the right person serving in the wrong role, and they feel like they've failed. They feel so frustrated. And even in my own life, I know God called me to the ministry. I tried my best to outrun it. But even then, I look back and go, if someone would have told me there was another way, if someone would have said I could do both, if someone would have told me you can be entrepreneurial and have a business and start in the church, like things would have looked a little different. I know they would have. So just speak to that for a little bit. Like, you know, how much of that pressure was there if there would have been another voice in that, you know, transformative season of your life?
There actually was another voice. I had a mentor, and I've been blessed to have formal and informal mentors throughout my life. And frankly, lesson, John, I didn't do anything to deserve or attract these guys. Somebody just sought me out. So I went, we were newly married, new church in a new town. We're in London, Ontario at the time. And I saw that there was a prayer meeting at 6 a.m. on Monday morning. I said, that's where the serious business guys go, I'll bet. That's where the serious movers and shakers in this church would go. And sure enough, I went there, and I was the youngest guy by 10 to 20 years. And one of the guys saddled up, and his name was Ron Burdock. And he said, let's go get some breakfast. And he just started pouring into me. Again, just kind of like there's a theme here, a thread line that I can see and that I'm trying to pay forward now at this point is to help people get unstuck. And at the time, I was doing executive search, headhunting, which is not ideal. It's a rough job. You want to try to be a Christian headhunter, it's like full-length bikini. You know, it is a complete oxymoron. It's a tough world to live in.
Les has one of those, by the way. It's awesome.
I'm telling you, I can't even wait. I was trying to place myself in another role. I was interviewing at Billy Graham, Evangelistic Association, Campus Crusade, Youth for Christ. I was like, now's the time to go into full-time ministry. And I was checking in with him about applying for the youth pastor job at this church. I was like, dude, I don't even care what it pays. I know what I can earn, but also I want to make an impact. I want to make a dent. I want to do what I'm made to do. And he said to me, and he knew me well, he said, Trent, you don't want this youth pastor job. You are so entrepreneurially minded that this church will drown you. Like, it's not a good fit for you, Trent. He goes, what do you want to do? He goes, tell me this. If you were a pastor there, how much one-on-one time do you think you get with any given kid on any given week? I said, well, if I'm crushing it, I get three lunches a week, maybe one-on-one with kids. He goes, well, when you were back at Cutco, and I'd left at this time, he goes, how much one-on-one time were you having with people? I said, well, that's numbered. It's dozens. It's a couple dozen of hours every month anyway. He says, Trent, you're going to impact people that would never darken the door of a church. You should go do that. And I'm so glad he did, because going back into that business, I was able to have an influence. I was able to, here's a case in point, 9/11 happens. I'm running an office, even in Ottawa, Canada, we were shook by our American friends. In fact, in the capital there, we thought we might be the next target too. There's whispers and radio, et cetera. I have three kids, I mean, 20 years old, walk into my office, say, what's happening? I said, well, I think we've got some answers, but it's not just a one day. Let's do an alpha course. And we did alpha out of my office, and we had three decisions come out of that experience there. So at the very least, they're being able to impact people and speak into the lives. What it blurred for me was the lines between full-time vocational ministry, just being a pastor, or could you do it if you're a plumber? And my answer is, right now, the world needs more radically sold out for God plumbers, as well as, yes, if you're called to be a pastor, man, I celebrate you.
Yeah.
That is so wonderful. And having been one for a cup of coffee, I think I've walked a mile in your shoes. I see you.
Yeah.
I see you, Pastor. I remember the last sermon I prepared. I was coming back from a business trip on the train from Connecticut back to New Jersey, and I hammered out that sermon as best I could. Got back home. My kids are watching a movie. Couldn't join them because I'm working on the sermon. Woke up at 5 a.m. for just-in-time delivery. 8 o'clock, we had to drive the truck to put the chairs out, and we just made it. But at that moment, I was like, man, I'm not stewarding my family well. I need to get out.
Yeah.
So for me, it was easier because I always remained a bivocational pastor. I love these pastors that are just, they're wildly sold out, going for it. You know, they're praying for cash to come in when the transmission goes. Like, they are being faithful and showing up, but they're grinding, and that's really, really hard. So hats off.
So you were able to build that coaching business, that, for example, you did that leadership stuff alongside your church staff role.
So fortunately, and then, I was still at Cutco. Still at Cutco while I was doing that. So that kind of alleviated the pressure of the finances.
Yeah.
And I took, I would say, a stipend, but I certainly wasn't drawing a salary. Part of the challenge was that we were small enough at that time still that we weren't able to replace me with a full-time pastor in South Jersey. It's very expensive, but so we did have to close. But at the same time, short term, it certainly functioned and it worked well.
Yeah. So we see, and I'm going to ask you to speak to this as someone who's had a foot in the church world as a pastor. You've been in that seat, and then certainly you've been doing really well in the corporate coaching space. We often say that pastors are set up well for coaching, not just hands down all of them. Like, there's some other prerequisites we would say need to be in place and in your life. And interestingly enough, just literally today, as you and I are recording this, Les and I made an episode that by this time this airs, this will already be out there, this episode where we ask the question, is coaching a good fit for me? And we kind of held up the good, but then we also went through kind of a checklist of, like, here's some things you may want to consider before jumping into coaching. But I'm just going to ask you to speak to that pastor. Like, what would you say to a pastor who's like, man, I could make an income coaching people and impacting people. I've got some of the skill set in ministry. I've kind of worked that muscle. I don't get paid in ministry and church life like I could get paid as a professional coach. Like, what would you say if you just had a brief minute to talk to a pastor and encourage them? What are some, you know, maybe encouragements or even warnings that you would offer up to them? Like, hey, here's some things to consider if you want to jump into that coaching space.
It's a great question. I think that at base level, a pastor's job is knowing the sheep. It's knowing their people. And if you're curious, and I find a lot of pastors to be wildly curious first, right? They're showing up, in other words, in not a judgmental place. They're showing up with an open mind, trying to figure out what's happening here for real. There's what the person's saying, and then there's what they mean. And they have a lot of practice in troubleshooting that as well. A lot of that ethic comes under the counseling or pastoral counseling type of ethic. And in my opinion, although it's different, a lot of the boxes are similar in terms of asking good questions, in terms of for them to get unstuck as a participant, they need to be doing the work. So there are a lot of things that, as I coach other, particularly counselors, not necessarily pastors that are looking to get into this, but for counselors, I'm like, you should probably mix in some coaching. It usually is 4 to 5x what you charge for a counseling session. Yeah. It's a lot more lucrative. And a lot of those boxes are the same. I might even say it this way. I still have a few, I'm not seeking counseling scenarios, but I've had coaching clients that are looking for some marriage counseling, let's say. And I've right now decided to not say no when those opportunities present themselves. Mm-hmm. That said, is any counseling conversation I have is 10x the energy of a coaching conversation.
Yes.
It is a lot easier to coach, right?
Yes.
And I might even say this. I tap out relatively quickly at the even the pastoral counseling level.
Yep.
I have too much respect for that that vocation. It's insured. You go to school. There's a reason that you want a licensed, qualified counselor helping you navigate and guide you through things. That said, the coaching piece is a lot easier than that counseling piece, but it's not easy, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So depending on what the skill makeup is there, I would encourage them to consider it. Now, I'm also aware, as your listeners would probably say, there's no way that dog hunts. Not in my area. There's no way I could flip the script and charge people in my congregation for coaching, or a business, frankly, to coaching. Usually when the pastor comes up, they're even surprised, I think, sometimes when they get a check for doing the funeral.
Yeah, which, for real.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Or the wedding. What? There's a charge for the wedding? Yeah. So yeah. What I would encourage pastors is that it's never been easier in 2024 to coach outside of your area, your geographical area. Of our dozens of coaching clients, I think we've got three of them that I meet with in person.
Right.
Everybody else is via Zoom, which is crazy. You know, it's pandemic. I noticed you guys started your podcast right before the pandemic. We launched Veritas January before the pandemic. And yet, who knew? Back in 2019, I was asking, oh, are you familiar with Zoom? Well, we'll just do FaceTime then. Everybody knows Zoom now.
Yeah.
And so for pastors to be able to make that connection, I think, again, even their ability to connect quickly with another human being lends them to be better at connecting on a coaching level as well. So it does check a lot of boxes. I would encourage them to check it out. Again, not all coaching is created equally. One of the things we endeavored to do this year was not just coach, but at Veritas, we're also coaching the coaches. So my process to get verified and certified, if you will, I listened to Brian, I think it's Stoll earlier this in the podcast series. He went to John Maxwell. I went to John Maxwell and studied Christian Simpson's program. It's outstanding. I studied it to the point of transcription, and not by hyperbole. I transcribed everything that he said. And I'm trying to bring that process now to actually certify other coaches. It's not en masse. There's not an application process at our website. But for a pastor that was listening to this podcast, if they're curious, I would love to get even a 20-minute call with them via Zoom, see if I could affirm that pursuit. Even if Veritas wouldn't be a fit for them necessarily, it'd be a great way to be able to give back and, of course, be able to impact the coaching community. If you allow me here, there's like 76 million baby boomers retiring and dying right now. Mm-hmm. And apparently only 55 million of us Gen Xers to take over, which is why you're seeing labor shortage, which is why you're seeing on the news. Owner of Subway makes sandwiches today. That's not why she bought that Subway franchise, but it's hard to find people right now. It's also hard for companies to find leadership and churches to find leadership now, meaning that they're going to have to do more with less, or stated otherwise, make their people awesome.
Yeah.
So coaching is a thing that is going to be here to stay. Like AI, it's not going away. You're going to see more and more of it. And there's, you know, not all coaches are created equal.
Yeah.
So if you can step into this world, it certainly might be a place where there's going to be a lot of, I wouldn't say job security, but companies need coaching. Churches need coaching to get unstuck.
Yeah. I'm going to ask a question, and I'm set it up this way. Just so you know, kind of one of the things Les and I often talk about to our community, we don't recommend a pastor look to his congregation as the primary pond to fish from with coaching specifically.
Yeah.
I think it can happen, but I would say it's probably more the exception than the rule to say, yeah, you know, turn to the people you've been leading as their pastor and say, hey, let's jump into a professional coaching relationship. It would take, this is just my opinion, that would be some special boundaries and some circumstances. So we encourage pastors, like, have influence beyond your congregation, go beyond that to set up an actual business. Here's the question though. One of the big things we see our pastors struggle with is they've really been taught, especially the longer they've been in and around church world, they have been so taught to devalue their time and the results that they deliver, and just they've come to accept, I do a lot of work and get underpaid for it. Yeah. The thought of setting up a business and having someone pay them significantly to do the stuff that has just been expected to do for free, in addition to all the other pastoral duties I have and expectations, it's a big, yeah, it's a big gap to help pastors across. So you come from a place of learning to sell. You know, you had a great, great training in that with Cutco, and then you get into the coaching side of things. Speak to that pastor that's like, I know I've got the muscle to coach somebody because I've had thousands of hours of dealing with people and all of those things we just talked about, but man, I don't know how to sell myself. I don't know how to sell my services and launch a business around this thing. Like, what encouragement would you give to that pastor listening to this in regards to that?
Well, at least two thoughts. One is, like everything else, how do you get good? We study. Study, we learn, we splash around and explore. Faith to influence, that's Justin Janowski, who's guested on this podcast as well, has an outstanding sales school for Christian coaches specifically that I could not recommend enough.
Yeah.
To jump in there and learn that, even if you've got some sales training, I've got tons of sales training. I joined his school, wrote a check for $12,000. I'll put it right out there, right? Yeah. I got a good deal, but I'm saying I invested heavy into that, even being a coach, so I could join the mastermind group and be other like-minded people, but also learn specifically how to sell this intangible coaching thing, right? Yeah. How do we sell this? Let me take it further. I think it's noble, the idea that, hey, I'm doing the right thing, regardless of the outcome, regardless of the financial outcome. I love my pastor brothers out there. All right. So let me celebrate that. Also, what if coaching could alleviate some of the pressure off of your church so that you could keep supporting your pastor habit, if you will, keep supporting that thing and take that pressure off. So one of the things we try to do with our new coaches, it's not just pastors. A lot of us as new people in a new place distrust the value that we're bringing to the marketplace. And things are only worth what people will pay, but we usually underestimate what people would be willing to pay based on the actual value that you're bringing. So we try to, with these coaches, I'm saying you're not charging enough. Let me work you through how to charge what's fair and appropriate. So for example, our top rate is $25,000 per client. For coaching, you break that down, I can't justify commoditizing my time at $1,084 an hour. That's crazy. Unless one of the guys I started coaching, his line one in his business was $600,000 in revenue and got that to $1.2 million. And now it's repeatable for him.
Mm-hmm.
If you could pay $25,000 a year for 5 years and then make $600,000 a year more every year after that, you'd take that deal all day long. So now it is worth it, but it's not necessarily me commoditizing the time. It's commoditizing the result. Until you've had that experience, it's hard to justify that in your own heart even. So I would get around other people who have learned how to price yourself appropriately so that you can start to scale that quickly, if you will.
Yeah.
Most pastors are bringing more to the table than they think.
Yep.
And one of the things that might hold them back, by the way, might be, well, I don't want to be a distraction. I would suggest that coaching might be one of the places that actually would serve your ability as a shepherd, as a pastor. I think you'll be growing, green and growing as you're discovering things and even about how the human heart works and how to get people unstuck. That will affect you, I think, positively with your local flock. So I would encourage that. I think it is a very good place for pastors that are considering moonlighting or side gigging. This is a good fit. Certainly no worse than, you know, coaching baseball or selling Comcast or whatever it is that they're considering as other jobs.
Yeah. I'm reading between the lines a little bit. So this is me saying this. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but what I'm kind of hearing is if you are a pastor and you just happen to be at Tuesday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Zoom call, pouring into someone in a ministry call, and someone from the church walks in, the board, like, what's our pastor doing? Well, he's on a call with someone on Zoom ministering to them. Most churches are going to go, cool, that's what we expect of our pastor. If that ministry just so happens to look like a coaching call where he's pouring into someone's life and, oh, by the way, getting paid adequately for the services he's rendering, it's still ministry. So, you know, I say this a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I usually lead with the ask forgiveness, not permission, when it comes to this sort of thing. Like, launch a business, start serving some people. You don't need to go get your board's permission to do ministry and jump on Zoom calls with some people and start serving them in powerful conversations. It's expected anyway. of your role. So go ahead and do it because it's ministry. But
a lot of times it's just a matter of clawing some time back, frankly. And, you know, between the extra late nights, et cetera, or early mornings that aren't accounted for. Listen, if any of my pastor friends that are full time, what's full time? So in the workplace, full time is 35, 40, maybe 50 hours. I don't know a single pastor that works less than 50 hours, yeah. Not a single one.
Right.
And part-time pastors, by the way, it's typically 40 hours. So again, when we start going through this, if they can't gift you more income, ask them to gift you some time, maybe a day back where you could just, as opposed to taking that coaching session at the office, maybe take that at home, have a professional setup. Of all the side gigs, the cost is literally a decent microphone, a webcam, and your laptop that you probably already have at the church. So it's very inexpensive to launch that business. And frankly, of all the businesses, side gigging as a coach, you can build it slowly and scale it while working that full-time job. I do not recommend anybody burn the boats and just try to build a book of business as a coach. That's hard.
Tell us more about that, because we do find that in our community, people who need quick income and they're like, I'm going to be a coach. And it's like, this is not an easy place to go for quick income. Say more about that.
If you're going to build it, you want to build it right. And you could build it perhaps quickly if you were only charging $40 an hour for coaching or $75. Maybe you could. What I normally recommend to those that are excited about coaching, I said, get another job right now. Mm-hmm. If you're not working right now, get another job to alleviate the pressure and urgently build and start to scale your coaching business. You might need some more skills, by the way. And some of those skills, unfortunately, in most cases, if you're a coach, you have to sell. And again, most coaches don't want to sell. This is where it gets hard, right? Mm. To find that balance in between. But what I'd recommend that they do is have something that alleviates that financial pressure so that they can simply get good at their craft.
Yeah.
So if they want to undercharge, it's not a big deal. They can at least start to get some repetitions in and improve their craft. You know, that 10,000 hours, that matters. But I would also encourage them to not discount the hours that they have. So a lot of that pastoral, again, one-on-one experience does translate. I don't know if it's a one-to-one, but it's not zero is what I would suggest there. So as we're trying to scale up, alleviate pressure. Don't make this your full-time bag baby. It's really hard.
Well, one of the things, I believe one of the reasons pastors don't want to sell, or you know, coaches struggle with selling, is because of all the negative connotation and mental baggage we have around selling and what that means, and we don't want to be that. So kind of coming back to Justin Janowski and his sales school, I too am a graduate of that. I did the cheaper $5,000 route. I did not join the mastermind, but I told Les, I remember too, calling Les saying, hey, I'm getting on a sales call with Justin. I said, I don't plan on buying this, but I'm just curious to talk with him because I really loved being in his challenge this week.
So naive, my friend. So naive.
And Les said, get your wallet out. If you're getting on a sales call with Justin, you're buying. So, and he was right.
So good. And I love the way that he teaches, especially Christians, how to sell. It's a place of adding value before ever asking for anything. It's about leading with integrity. It's about making sure. One of the things he recently said was win-win or no deal.
So
he'll start a call and say, hey, at the end of this call, my goal is that it's win-win. You're excited about this and I am too. And we're moving forward, or no deal. And that's okay. Hopefully you'll have some clarity at the end of this call. I'm going to add value, even if you're not coming with me. Or we schedule our next call if you need some more information. That's just a thumbnail sketch into the integrity that he's bringing to the table in terms of, I would say, that world-class sales ethic that Cutco, in that he has that background too.
Right.
But also refining that with, I think, a good theological filter. So, but we've got to figure that out, right? How are we going to do this? If selling is something I'm doing to somebody, I don't know if coaching should be a thing for you, because you have to sell for this to be a thing. Not just once, by the way. If they're writing a check for hundreds of dollars a month to talk to you one-on-one, we've got to sell them on an ongoing basis on what's really happening. And I'm not saying manipulate or gaslight. I'm saying if there are wins along the way, we better help them be consciously aware of how the coaching process is helping them move forward and get unstuck. Hear me, not Trent Booth is awesome, but as we connect, look at what you've done, look at the decisions that you've made and how you've leveled up. So a lot of times, as we're celebrating and even encouraging their progress, coaching has been a catalyst for that, but it's not the only thing. So we're trying to frame that in well. I'm just describing another different way that we're selling, and it's good. The yes and.
Yeah. One thing, too, that I want to throw out here, and you can speak to this, but that I've I've tried to help pastors see over the years, especially in regards to coaching, is I'll ask pastors, if I asked you to show me written proof, you've got 24 hours to show me and provide written evidence that you've made a significant impact in the lives of people, could you do it? And usually they'll think for a minute and go, well, yeah, I could. I've got a whole box full of cards, yeah, letters, emails, text messages of people saying that God used your voice to make a tremendous impact in our marriage, in my spiritual life, in whatever. And I want pastors to connect with that, to recognize that that is a skill set, that's a gift. God has used you to make a real impact in the lives of others. And again, it gets a little bit devalued sometimes. I want you to see that that can be monetized and used to continue to make that type of impact. It can just pay a lot better than it has for years, you know, in your role as a pastor. So anything you want to add to that?
Hot take. What if the parable of the talents isn't just about being a steward of our money, but what if God is holding us accountable for the talent that we have? So if you are wired to help people and help them get unstuck, is part of how God is going to hold me accountable to what I did with what he gave me. Right. And I think there's no more noble place here on earth than a job as a pastor. I love this. And the yes and is, what if you could also help companies? What if you could also help individual executives in South Dakota that need you, by the way? And here's one of the fascinating parts for me, John, is that as we've onboarded brand new coaches, I'm saying wet behind the ears still, and I would hand them somebody I've worked with for over a year. I thought there would be a little bit of a drop off in quality. I'm 20,000 hours in. They're 20 hours in. I thought it would be a Coke that Coke situation, and I was wrong.
Wow.
First session, this new coach has a breakthrough with this mom, and she's impacted like never before, crying, thank you so much. And I'm like, she never cried for me. Now, part of this was I did a good job drafting and training that coach, right? But also the diversity of voices. What I'm saying here is that there are pastors right now that can impact people in only a way that they can.
Right.
Their experience, I would say their valley experiences, especially how they've walked in that valley and their heart for people, uniquely equips them to help people that are going through similar things and perhaps even avoid going deeper into that valley by avoiding some of those real challenges. So I would challenge that pastor to consider, you know, I don't want to distract them. If they're like called and they're crushing it, hey man, you'll find a way. And I do believe that God will provide what you need, not necessarily all we want, but what you need. That said, is I also know that there are some churches that can't afford the pastor that they have, and that pastor's being faithful and sticking around. And if there's a way you can create income to be able to stick around there and be faithful and support that church and grow at the same time and love and help people, I would say test it out. Don't take my word for it, but splash around and petition the Lord, see what he's got for you. Again, what if you're wired this way, and what if only you can help that person?
Yep, that's good. Well, I'll tell you if someone is listening to this and they want to connect with you or you know, go deeper into this, like what would be your call to action to them or your invitation? Where can they connect with you and learn more?
Appreciate that. VeritasLeadershipGroup.org is our website. There's lots of free content on there, including strategic journaling was a recent keynote we just did. They could get access to that, see if we are a little bit more of their brand in particular. I'm excited about having more Christian podcasts. The ones I have there are not necessarily as such. Most of them are business oriented or more of a secular podcast. That said, is they could get a one-on-one session with me by going to book a consultation. That's right on the website. Love to connect with people via LinkedIn. I've connected with some of your other guests and you too via LinkedIn as well. Trent Booth doesn't get any easier. I'm on almost every social media platform that your listeners would be on. I'm not on Snapchat and not really TikTok, but if you're to go to LinkedIn/Trent Booth or Instagram/Trent Booth, you're going to find me. And I would love to connect, even if it's a 25-minute Zoom, even if we're not working together, for me to encourage other pastors. What a great day. If I can pepper those in between a couple coaching sessions, let's go, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Les, do you have anything else before we wrap things up?
I really appreciate that. I understand your heart there and investing in these special individuals. So thanks so much for being willing to come on, Trent, and for all that you're doing. and for being willing to invest in those folks as they reach out. We appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks, Les. I appreciate you. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm helping a friend of mine as well. He's a podcast host, Wayne Wagner at Visionary Wealth Management. And he's doing Envision More podcasts. And I'm the Les. I'm the guy in the chair supporting
that's right.
color commentary, the cool question, you know, if John's got to come up for air. But also, I've been on those some podcasts recently where I spoke once in the 45-minute podcast. But they're vibing. Also, yeah. Les, I see you. And you're adding value, brother. I appreciate you.
All right, man.
That's good stuff. Thanks for telling Les. I don't tell Les that enough because I see him and I need him. He does great stuff here. So thank you for.
Hey, we're always better with a partner, right?
Absolutely.
Jesus didn't send the 12 out individually. You could have covered more ground by sending them individually.
It's way more fun.
Send them out in groups of two, man. And there's wisdom for that. So for you to have a partner in crime, if you will, to be able to do this with, I'm grateful for both y'all.
Well, thanks, man. It's been a pleasure getting to know you, and any friend of Justin Janowski is a friend of ours. So thanks Amen. For coming on the show and adding value, man. This has been good, and we wish you all the best as you continue to serve the kingdom and serve others, man. Keep doing it.
Huge fan. Thanks again for having me, guys. Bigger fan now that I've been on. You guys are great. Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go. Good stuff from Trent Booth. Guys, we encourage you to go check him out at the links that'll be shared in the show notes there. And one other thing that we want to encourage you to not only check out, but take action on and join us for is our upcoming live event, March 8th, 2024. Les, this is going to be at your house. Say something fun. Yep. Why should I come and hang out with you?
That's the place to be, man. Come hang out with some cool guys. Not myself.
Well, yeah, you're one of them, man.
There will be some other cool dudes there. No, it's a beautiful place, real relaxing setting, and we'll have some great content. We'll roll up our sleeves and get a lot of good work done. Kind of a boot camp sort of intensity. When we work, we'll work, and when we have downtime, it'll really be downtime. Be good food. My wife's a great cook, great host. And so for anybody that's already a part of our community, you know, by being a member, you're a member of Pastors Business Alliance or part of our Business Builders Group, you're welcome to also come the evening before. We'll have a kind of a VIP dinner on the night before, which would be Thursday night. And then, of course, the all day on Friday. So,
hey, what's Paige making for us on that Thursday night for the VIP dinner? Has she got a menu going yet?
It'll be we need to put whatever. Just give me a request, man.
Mm.
She does a lot of she can do a lot of Cajun stuff. So I would imagine she'll either have some jambalaya or gumbo, or it'll still be a little bit cool then. So it's still good weather for that kind of stuff. That'd be my guess.
Jambalaya is my middle name. I don't know if you knew that or not, Les, but John Jambalaya Sanders.
Wow, that's good to know.
Yeah, sign me up for that. Let's do some of that for the VIP dinner. But
and even if we have something else, we can do that for a side. You know, we may do steaks and baked potato, or, you know, steaks on the grill or something. I don't know, but my guess is that she'll have that somewhere in the mix.
I didn't have a big lunch today. Now I'm hungry. We're talking about jambalaya and all this stuff, yeah. But EntreePastors.com/live is the link to get registered for your spot for that live event. Yes, if you're in our membership in any level, we'd love to have you for the VIP dinner on that Thursday night before. Otherwise, sign up. It's $97, I believe, for the ticket, and we're going to impart value and really help you guys get your businesses up and off the ground, have some really powerful conversations, and really get into your story. How can we help you get traction and progress moving forward with the business that you're trying to build, all from the place of really understanding the nuances of church leadership and doing this as a pastor. I think that's really our sweet spot, Les. There's lots of business resources out there, lots of really good ones, but very few of them that I'm aware of understand how to launch a business while you are leading a church and while you're maneuvering all of the details of church leadership and pastoring. So you and I offer that. And so if that's your thing, man, come hang out with us.
Yeah, we've done it. And several people that'll be there are in that space too.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. So entrepastors.com/live, sign up there. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time to be a part of the podcast today and listen. We're grateful for each and every one of you. And we look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. Les, have a good week, my friend. We'll see you.
All right. See you later.
Bye, guys.